This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! Thank you very much for downloading, subscribing, watching on YouTube, however you're consuming Rico Bronya, we thank you. A few things we're going to hit on the podcast today. Most of it will be a deep dive into the reliever free agent market. We'll also address Carlos Mendoza, finishing third in the NL Manager of the Year voting, and the Mets pull off a trade. They pulled off a trade on a Tuesday, acquiring Jose Siri from the Tampa Bay Rays. But before we get to those three big topics, never before, ever before in the history of Rico Bronya have we received as many angry emails as we received over the last few days. There's no managerial move that Mendoza made, no managerial move that Buck Showalter made, no trade or decision made by the front office that received as much backlash as the disgusting sounds that came out of the mouth of Pete Hoffman during our awards show, Rico. This was disgusting. Pete's a horrible human. He needs to be suspended. His microphone needs to be disinfected. And what's funny is, while doing that award show, Rico, which you can certainly download wherever you download your podcast, I didn't even notice it. I had no idea that Pete was making strange noises. But we heard your voices, and Pete would like to offer an apology. So he's sorry. It'll never happen again. We will create a dump button here on the Rico. I need one too, because God knows I cough a lot. So Pete understands your disgust with his sounds. And he's genuinely sorry. And we're very sorry from the Rico Bronya family. If you haven't heard the award show, Rico, and you want to hear all the disgusting sounds of Pete Hoffman, you should absolutely download it. I think that's going to be one of the Ricos that live in history forever. So we wanted to address that right off the top. Now let's get to the news of the day before we get to the relievers. Number one, Carlos Mendoza, finishing third in the NL Manager of the Year voting. This doesn't bother me. This is not something I was surprised about or angry about. I have learned at my age to not care that much about awards and also the award of Manager of the Year, because we're very, very biased. We are. I think in baseball more than any other sport, we just watch our team for the most part. I mean, I like watching other teams. I like watching a lot of baseball, but even as I've gotten older, I probably watch less baseball not involving my team than maybe I did 15 or 20 years ago. I can still sit down and watch a good Sunday night baseball game. Don't get me wrong, or flip around
on the MLB package. But I think that bias has created us living in a universe where we only care about the Mets and we judge what we did. And there's no doubt that Carlos Mendoza did an outstanding job, especially in his rookie season as manager, especially in New York City, especially with the media scrutiny, and certainly off of the horrible start that they had. I don't think anyone's doubting that Mendy had a great year. But if we are being fair, if we're trying to be fair, the Milwaukee Brewers not only won their division, and I don't care how crappy the division is, you still have to win the division. Not only did they win their division, but Pat Murphy was also in a tough spot. He was replacing the hottest free agent manager we've seen in a long time in Craig Counsell. And he had injuries. His best player, Christian Yelich, or at least one of his best players, had a back issue that took him out the last few months of the season. Devin Williams, the electric closer, missed a big chunk of the year. So this isn't about necessarily Pat Murphy versus Carlos Mendoza. It's about understanding that Pat Murphy did an incredible job in Milwaukee, and he deserved manager of the year. The other thing that's in our brain, and I mentioned this a few Ricos ago, is we think about the playoffs. We think about the fact that Mendy completely outmanaged Pat Murphy, undressed him, and he did. But that doesn't count. This is a regular season award. So what happened in October, as much as it's engraved in our brain, does not matter. Would I have put Carlos Mendoza over Mike Schilt? Yes, I would have. I probably, if I was voting and I was trying to be as fair as possible, I'd have Mendy number two. So I'm happy with the year Carlos had. I'm looking forward to the future. It's not to take anything away from what he accomplished, but if we're trying to have like a fair baseball conversation, it is not a disgrace that Pat Murphy won the award. It's not. The other thing is, Buck Showalter won the award 2 years ago. Where'd that get us? I mean, he got fired after the next season. So winning the manager of the year, while a great accomplishment, what does it really mean? I do find it interesting that Murphy and Vogt, who won on the AL side, and certainly Mendy, who finished third, first-time managers. So it showed you that being a first-time manager is certainly not a disqualifying thing in terms of having a successful season. But congratulations to Carlos. I think finishing third is an accomplishment, but I did not lose any sleep over him finishing third, nor should you as a Met fan. Now let's get to the trade. So this one broke during the Evan and Tiki show. The glass breaks on our program. And as soon as I hear Mets make a trade, my brain starts to operate with, okay, what level of trade are we talking about? Are we talking about a minor trade? Are we talking about a trade for a former Yankee, and that's the only reason we're bringing it up on the air? Or are we talking about something significant? So for those 5 seconds, my brain went into overlock on what did we do? And the answer is the Mets made a trade that impacts their major league roster. That's why it's certainly worthy of talking about. But it's not changing this offseason one iota. Jose Siri acquired for Eric Orsi. A couple of things. Eric Orsi is a guy we saw briefly last year. First of all, he's a two-time cancer survivor. So, I mean, thank God for that. And Eric Orsi is a great human who's lived a very tough life. And the fact he's pitching in Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball, amazing. But Eric Orsi, when he came up, the brief time he was up here, yeah, nothing special. So the Mets gave up a reliever that certainly Tampa Bay could develop. You never know. Bullpen arms are very unpredictable. And the Mets got back what I look at as a A-plus defensive fourth or fifth outfielder who's got a big-time personality, which would be obnoxious if he's not on your team, but nothing more than a fourth or fifth outfielder. That's what Jose Siri is. He's 29 years old. He's under team control for a couple of more years, not making any kind of money. And I said this on the air, so I'll certainly say it now with a day to think about it. He is absolutely a Harrison Bader replacement. Harrison Bader made a decent amount of money for what I think he always was, which was a fourth outfielder. Now, Bader early in the season played a lot more than a fourth outfielder, but when push came to shove and Bader's bat cooled off considerably, as great as he was defensively, we saw what happened late in the year. He was a fourth outfielder, and Tyrone Taylor essentially became the center fielder. What I think the Mets did with a trade like this is I think they basically got a less accomplished offensive player, though a guy with more pop. I mean, Siri hit 24 home runs 2 years ago, but if you look at his overall numbers and certainly what he did last year, leaves a lot to be desired. He's not exactly a big-time offensive player. But what you did was you replaced Bader with a less accomplished offensive player. You want to tell me he still has a bigger upside because he's relatively young? I don't know if I buy that, but okay. And defensively, is on his level. I can't say he's better or worse because the truth is we need to watch him every day. We know what the grading is. We know how a lot of the defensive metrics grade Siri on a very high level, which is great and certainly helps us understand what kind of player he is. But until we watch him every day, we don't know how truly good he is. We don't know if we're going to say, yeah, he's better than Harrison Bader, or he's the same as Harrison Bader, or he's slightly below Harrison Bader. But here's what I know. He's Harrison Bader, and he's making less money. Now, why does that matter? Why do we care about the Mets saving money on a fourth or fifth outfielder? We care because that money, the extra money, can be used to acquire whomever, a bigger time reliever, a back into the rotation starter, whoever. So on the level or on the surface, I like the trade. I don't think they gave up a lot in Eric Orsi. I understand eyes wide open that Eric Orsi could go to Tampa Bay and develop because that's what relievers do. So there's certainly a risk when it comes to that. But when you look at his role on the Mets in 2025, his expected role on the Mets in 2025, the Mets traded a minor leaguer who maybe was going to be up here a couple of different times just to fill out innings for a guy who's going to be on the major league roster and is going to be their fourth outfielder. So what the Mets have done early on in this offseason is Brandon Nimmo is still the left fielder. As of now, Starling Marte is the right fielder, but I think that can change, whether it's Marte being moved to another team, whether it's Marte becoming the DH, which is my idea, and center field kind of remains this spot where maybe Drew Gilbert comes up at some point, maybe Jet Williams comes up at some point, maybe Luis Angel Acuña is a factor at some point, but probably at the beginning of the year, you're looking at Tyrone Taylor and Jose Siri. You're looking at two, ideally fourth outfielders, probably sharing the center field job. Hopefully that doesn't last long because the hope is one of those young players I mentioned eventually takes the job. So what do I think of the trade? It's a fine trade. I don't think they gave up a lot. I think we need to understand what Jose Siri is. He's not a star. He's not going to develop into an everyday player, but he's certainly a very useful fourth outfielder, especially because his defense, he can steal a base, I guess. He's had 14, 15 stolen bases a year. So athlete can run very good defensively and pimps home runs better than anybody, as Yankee fans will tell you. I don't know if you guys saw this, but last year there was a little pimp off between Jose Siri and, yes, Juan Soto. Now, no, this is not going to affect Juan Soto's decision because he may not like Jose Siri. I can promise you that. But the Yankees and Rays played a game. I forget how it actually started, but bottom line is Siri hit a home run and then took an hour and a half rounding the bases. Juan Soto then hits a home run and decides, okay, you want to take forever rounding the bases? I'll one-up you. And basically Juan Soto walked as slowly as possible around the bases and then comically after the game said, oh, it was a hot day. Got to rest the hamstrings. So is there a little bit of a history between Juan Soto and Jose Siri? Sure. It is not impacting free agency at all. And the running joke, obviously, is that the Mets acquired a Dominican outfielder whose first name begins with J, has three other letters, and then last name begins with I and has three other letters. Juan Soto, Jose Siri. Either way, nice little trade by David Stearns. I got no issue with it. Now let's get to the bullpen. So on this episode, we'll dive into a lot of the free agent bullpen arms. We will have an episode coming up shortly where we look at the trade market for relievers, trade market for starters, the trade market all around. But today is really just looking at free agency when it comes to relievers. The first thing we need to do to begin this exercise is to understand what they need. The New York Mets, as of right now, have, to me, one absolute mortal lock for their bullpen in 2025, and that's Edwin Diaz. That's the only guy. He's obviously signed to a long-term contract. He had a very up-and-down year. We had a debate about that during the awards edition of the Rico Bronya, but Edwin Diaz is the unquestioned closer of this team. He's making $20 million a year. He is here. End of story. After that, you have guys that I would say are likely to be in the bullpen. And then you've got a ton of different, hey, good spring training, they can make the team. The likely in the bullpen guys, to me, are really only two guys. And that would be Reed Garrett, who does have options left. So the Mets could send Reed Garrett down. That is on the table. That's why he's not a mortal lock, despite the year he had last year. That makes a difference. You know, Reed Garrett has a terrible spring training. Is it possible he's optioned to AAA? Sure. I don't think it's likely, but it's on the table. So Reed Garrett, who also had a very up and down year, I thought overall had a surprisingly decent season. He's guy number one who is likely to be in this Met bullpen. Number two is Dednell Nunez. To me, if Dednell Nunez is healthy coming out of spring training, he should be in the bullpen based on how well he pitched the limited amount of time he was up last year. But much like Garrett, Nunez has options as well. That's it. Those are the only locks. Jose Buhto is not a lock. And keep this in mind about Buhto. He does not have any options left. So Jose Buhto is going to be on the 26-man roster. But, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, he could be in the rotation. Free agency could help dictate that. Now, if I had to guess right now before this really starts, my gut is Budo's going to end up in the bullpen. And I think as we go through this list, you'll come to that same conclusion. But there is a possibility, again, depending on how this goes in the offseason, that Buhto is in the rotation. Tylor McGill is another possibility for the bullpen. Do the Mets hold on to him as a swing starter? He has an option left. He could go back to AAA. They could keep him stretched out with the idea of he's our sixth starter if we need it. Now, they could also do that with him in the bullpen and make him a long reliever. So Tylor McGill is the other option of could be in the bullpen, but certainly not a lock. Here are the other guys without options. So these are the guys who coming into spring training, assuming they are still on the Met 40-man roster, because obviously a lot can change this offseason, have at least a minor leg up. Because if you try to send them down, they're gone. Both Youngs, Danny Young, Alex Young, Dylan Covey is another guy. And those are the three, if I'm not mistaken. The other bullpen options that I guess will go to spring training with a shot, Max Kranick, who we saw last year, Grant Hartwig, Matt Gage, Waskar Brazoban, who I think has a leg up on making this team. But he too has options. And we saw that last year. So Brazoban could certainly go down. So I lay this out so we all have an idea of what we're dealing with going into the offseason. So based on what they have, I'll tell you my opinion before we get to the names. I would want one reliever, just one at least, where I feel awesome about adding him to the bullpen. And that's tough to do with bullpen arms. A lot of guys are not reliable. So I don't mind spending big-ish money, for a relief pitcher that I can stick in there in the eighth inning or potentially close, depending on how a game goes. You know, Edwin Diaz is always an option to me to come into a game in the seventh or eighth inning, depending on the situation. So, but to get another reliever that I have a high level of trust in. Most relievers are not like that. Most relievers are, yeah, he had a good year last year, or yeah, he had a good year 2 years ago. Let's give him a 2-year deal and see what we got. Now, we'll go through these names, and we can play the game along. Who fits that lockdown reliever, that reliever you feel really good about to add to this bullpen? Because my thought is, if I can add one of those guys, and now I've got Edwin Diaz, mysterious lockdown reliever, then I've got Reed Garrett and Dednell Nunez, likely Jose Buhto, I'm already at five. And then you can start building your bullpen with guys who make the team who had a good spring training, who you never know, maybe put it all together. So I go into this exercise saying I want one top-end guy and then maybe one solid you-never-know kind of reliever. Now, who's who? Let's go through it. Let's go right to the top of the market with Tanner Scott. Tanner Scott is 30 years old. He'll be 31 in July. He is coming off, and this is what's so encouraging about him, back-to-back tremendous seasons. Back-to-back years in which he was dominant, a 2.31 ERA 2 years ago, 1.75 ERA this past year, did not miss a beat when he was traded from Miami to San Diego. Keep an eye on this, though, about Tanner Scott. Back-to-back 70-plus appearance seasons. So is there a worry about the workload over the last couple of years? Maybe. The other thing you've got to think about with Tanner Scott is, does he want to close? Does Tanner Scott in free agency look around and say, no, I'm not setting up for Edwin Diaz with the occasional save based on matchup. I want to close. Obviously, if that's a thing, they're not going to get him. I hold out hope in this day and age, especially when you're a reliever and this is your payday, because this is Tanner Scott's big payday. He's 30 years old. He's coming off two awesome years in a row. He was one of the hottest commodities at the trade deadline. You don't have to give anything up to get him like you did prospect-wise at the deadline or like you have to do now via trade. So literally, you're signing him, and you're not giving anything up. This is his moment to get paid. This is his moment to get a big-time contract. I would love Tanner Scott on the team. I'll start right there. In a dream world, that's the reliever I'm describing to pair with Edwin Diaz. A lefty? Guy's pitched in the NL East. The guy's had back-to-back awesome seasons. He can close if I need to. That's the dream signing out of the bullpen. Here's the problem. Is Tanner Scott getting 4 years? Is Tanner Scott getting $75 million? He may. He may. If he's the top of the market, and I think he is, and you look at the other closer-ish options, he's clearly the top guy. We saw what Edwin Diaz got paid. We've seen what the top reliever gets paid, and I'm concerned that the Mets, maybe rightfully so, if you have a budget. The problem is with baseball, there's no real budget. Like if Steve Cohen's willing to spend $5 billion in the offseason, then just go sign the best players. Why are we freaking out about contracts? But we do need to be reasonable. There is a budget. I don't know if it's smart when you already have Edwin Diaz signed long-term to give Tanner Scott that kind of massive closer contract. So would I like him on the team? Absolutely. But if he's going to get that kind of massive contract, I think he prices his way away from the Mets. Because I don't think the Mets are going to be willing to pay two relievers top-notch closer money. But would I like him on the team? Yeah. How can I not? Finding reliable relievers are very difficult. Over the last few years, there haven't been many guys as reliable and as good as Tanner Scott. So the two big factors that may keep us from getting him, as much as I want him, and I think most people listening would say, sure, like why would you not want Tanner Scott, would be A, he's wanting of closing games, and then B, how massive is the contract going to get?
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, number two on the list is Kirby Yates. Kirby Yates is 38 years old, so you're talking about significantly older than Tanner Scott. Remember, he missed all of 2021 with Tommy John surgery. He missed most of 2022 with Tommy John surgery. In 2023, solid year. Made 61 appearances, had a 3.28 ERA, and then last year, he was back to being dominant. 61 appearances, a microscopic 1.17 ERA. Couple of things about Kirby Yates. Would I have interest in him? Yes. This comes down to the contract. I can't give a guy, I'm sorry, who's 38 years old, so it could go at any moment, who had Tommy John 2 years ago, I can't give that guy more than 2 years. 2 years I wouldn't even love, 38, 39, but I get it. He's coming off a great year. He's been one of the better closers when given the opportunity. By the way, same factor with Tanner Scott. Does he want to close? Is Kirby Yates willing to come here and understand that, yeah, there'll be some moments where you can save a game, but Edwin Diaz is the closer. That's always kind of the predicament. And really, there are only three guys, in my opinion, in this free agent class that kind of fit that, where you're worried they may only want to close. Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, and we'll get to him later, but Kenley Jansen. I don't know about everybody else. I think everyone else would just take the money and be fine, would be my assumption. But to me, a one-year deal would be ideal. Give him a lot of money, no doubt. Give him a big moneyed one-year deal. But giving a guy 38 years old, only 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery, giving him anything more than 2 years would be a major, major risk. But adding Kirby Yates to the back of the bullpen, sign me up. Number three, Jeff Hoffman, Pete's cousin. I'm just kidding. I don't think he's related to Pete. Obviously, we had success against Jeff Hoffman. The Mets kind of knew what was coming during the postseason against Jeff, but he too, and this is very encouraging, he's coming off back-to-back good years. And I say that because I have no trust on consistencies from a lot of bullpen arms. There's a lot of volatility when it comes to this. It's like kickers in the NFL. Good year, bad year, good year. It's all over the place. The fact that Hoffman over the last 2 years has given you back-to-back good years and he's 32 years old, so he's relatively young, gives me a little bit more confidence on signing him. And because of his age and because he's pitched well, I think the years I'd go with Jeff is probably 3 years. I don't know if I can't go any more than that with basically any reliever, to be honest with you. But the back-to-back good years, doing it in the NLEs, doing it in the high-pressurized environment since going to Philadelphia, I think Jeff Hoffman would be a solid signing if they were able to get him. Next guy up is a former Met, David Robertson. So David Robertson was great for us in 2023. It was awesome. When the Mets traded him to the Miami Marlins, that was the first sign of, holy crap, they're giving up. Wow, the Mets are going to blow the whole thing up. They end up trading Robertson. They end up trading Scherzer, Verlander. We all know what happened. But, and I think most of us remember this, when David Robertson went to the Marlins in the middle of that pennant race, he fell apart. He was a disaster. Lost the closer's role. And certainly the thought I had was, is he done? No, he's in his late 30s. He's thrown a lot of innings over the course of his major league career. Did the Mets make this incredibly wise decision to not only trade David Robertson because they were giving up, but also, that was the best they were ever going to get from him. Here's the pause on that. Last year, and we probably paid a lot less attention to David and what he did last year out on the in the American League West, but David Robertson had a very good second half. He did not collapse and overall had a really strong season out of the bullpen. And the reason I bring up the second half at first is if David Robertson did the same thing as he did in 2023, where he had a good first half, fell apart in the second half, I would have no interest. Because we need a guy who's not going to crumble in August and September. Our expectations have been raised. We just got to the playoffs. We got to the NLCS. We need a guy who can pitch in October. I think David Robertson on a one-year deal is totally fine. He's going to be 40 in April. But here's the conversation we'd have to have about adding a guy like David Robertson. I would not work him very hard throughout the regular season. And I know that's an arrogant thing because you can't assume you're going to make the playoffs. You certainly can't. But I think David Robertson has shown you at his age with the innings on his arm that you can't abuse him, because the last thing you want is coming around in September, or in the Mets case, if they make it, October. You can't have a guy wearing down like that. So I think if you sign David Robertson, a little different than a guy like Jeff Hoffman or a guy like Tanner Scott, I would be very, very careful in my usage of him most of the season. Another guy is Buck Farmer. Buck Farmer is 34 years old. I don't love Buck Farmer. He had a good season last year, but a lot of the metrics will tell you it was a very lucky season that Buck Farmer had. So I think he'll get paid off of his success from last year. I'm not incredibly high on him. Another guy is Carlos Estevez. Carlos Estevez was very good as a closer in Anaheim. He gets traded to the Phillies. I think the Mets were involved too in potentially acquiring him. He was not as good in Philadelphia as he was in California. And we all remember the grand slam that Francisco Lindor hit off of him in game 4 of the NLCS. I'm very iffy on Estevez. See, to me, this is like the next level of relievers. I think Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, even Jeff Hoffman are probably more so on the top-ish tier of some of these relievers. I think there's a fall off when you talk about a guy like Carlos Estevez. Andrew Kittredge, who was with St. Louis last year, had a very good year. Very good year. So, but the concern with Kittredge is he was great in 2021, back in his Tampa days, missed a lot of time the next two seasons. So last year was a healthy year, made 74 appearances, pitched to a 2.80 ERA. But his history tells you, is he going to be able to do that again? Can you trust Andrew Kittredge to give you another solid year like he did last year in St. Louis? Dylan Floro. But, you know, I had some wins. I had some losses last year with some of the thoughts I had. So well before the trade deadline, I really wanted the Mets to make a trade with the Nationals to get Jesse Winker. And I nailed that one. I take my bows. I always wanted Jesse Winker. They brought him in. He was very effective. We all fell in love with him. But that wasn't the only guy I wanted from Washington. I also wanted Dylan Floro. Dylan Floro was having a very good year. And I thought, hey, if you're going to make a deal for Jesse Winker, throw in another reliever, throw in Dylan Floro. Well, Dylan Floro ended up getting traded at the deadline to the Arizona Diamondbacks, if memory serves correct. He was so bad with the Arizona Diamondbacks that they DFA'd him. Think about that. Think about you making a trade at the trade deadline for, I want to call him a minor piece, fine, a minor piece. And the guy is so bad that you actually you actually DFA him before the season is over. Would I still have an interest in Dylan Floro? Yeah, why not? On a one-year deal? As one of those relievers, not the top-end reliever I really trust, but as another arm to throw in there instead of Matt Gage or one of the Youngs? Why not? So more of a lower-level free agent, but Dylan Floro's out there. Here's one that you can absolutely argue is on the top tier, and that is Blake Treinen of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Blake Treinen, especially what he did in Game 5 against the Yankees, where basically Dave Roberts went balls to the wall to try to nail this thing down. Blake Treinen was absolutely tremendous this past season. And Blake Treinen's an interesting guy because when he's pitched, and the when is not that often, he has been dominant over the last three seasons that he's pitched. So last year with the Dodgers, he makes 50 appearances, so not a full season, pitches to a 1.93 ERA, effectively becomes the Dodgers' number one reliever come postseason time. And again, we saw what he did in Game 5 against the Yankees. He did not pitch in 2023. In 2022, he barely pitched. He only threw five innings. So coming into this season, Blake Treinen had barely pitched. Now, you go back to his last full season before that was back in 2021. He was one of the best relievers in baseball. 72 appearances, 1.99 ERA. You look at his numbers this past year, he picked up where he left off from 2021, and that's with missing two full seasons. I would love Blake Treinen if he wants to pitch New York, if he can handle New York, but it's got to be a short-term deal. He is 36 years old. He'll be 37 in the middle of June. He didn't pitch a full season last year, so that gives me, I guess, a little bit more hope that he isn't completely overworked despite all the appearances he made during the postseason. But he's one of those could-be high-end relievers, but he's less trustworthy because of the fact that he's barely pitched over the last couple of years. But Blake Treinen, good option. Let's get to Kenley Jansen. So Kenley Jansen's another one. He's 37 years old. He's going to be 38 in September. He had a solid year with the Red Sox, I'd say. I mean, he saved 27 games, had a low to mid-3 ERA, 3.29. The vibe I get on Kenley Jansen is that he wants to close. You know, you're talking about a guy who has 447 career saves. So I think when you get that far as a closer, you probably are, and you've won a championship, so he's won before, that the attitude probably is, I want to keep racking up saves. He's at 447. It's not nuts if he gets a few more years of opportunities to close games. He's going to get to 500. And I think Kenley Jansen is probably thinking legacy and Hall of Fame more than anything else. So I mention him because if he was willing to be a setup man, sure. Like, I mean, I wouldn't be against it. I just don't know if he's going to be willing to do that. I think that's the problem. So Kenley Jansen, certainly a name out there. A.J. Minter. I would love to sign A.J. Minter. Now, signing Atlanta Braves in our past doesn't always work out. And here's the full report on A.J. Minter. He's still relatively young. He's 31 years old. He's going to be 32 in September. He missed the last part of this season because he had a hip injury. So if you remember down the stretch, A.J. Minter wasn't there, and that's because he got hurt. But when he pitched in 2024, he pitched to a 2.62 ERA. He was very good. The year before that wasn't his best year, but he went out and made 70 appearances and pitched to a high 3 ERA. But his FIP, his fielding independent pitching, was actually very good, which leads you to believe that he was pitching to very, very bad luck. His strikeout numbers were very high. His walk numbers were very reasonable. So it feels like that ERA may have been a little bit of an outlier. Year before that, 2022, another 75 appearance season with a 2.06 ERA, with a very low whip, a whip under one. So if you take out, I know you can't, but you take out the end of the season where he didn't pitch and you hope that the hip surgery fixes whatever he had, A.J. Minter over the last 4 years has been one of the more reliable relievers in baseball. And oh, by the way, he's a freaking lefty, which the Mets could use. I would love A.J. Minter. Also, we don't have to face him anymore. That's like the added bonus. And you hurt a division rival. But I think this team, especially when you look around at some of the left-hand batters, obviously it's a little different this world. You can't just face a lefty and get out of there. But A.J. Minter is also a crossover guy. he can get everybody out. But it would certainly behoove this bullpen to have a left-handed reliever. They did not have one towards the end of last year. They didn't really have one at all last year. Brooks Raley was the guy early, and then he got hurt. And so they need one. And I think A.J. Minter, when you look at the available relievers, obviously Tanner Scott is a lefty, so he's number one. But when you look at all the relievers we've gone through, very few of them are lefties. Tanner Scott's the best of both worlds. A.J. Minter would be a very, very good signing. Speaking of lefties, Danny Colome. Is that even say his name? I've heard his name pronounced so many different ways. He's the lefty with the Baltimore Orioles, 35 years old. He's never healthy. That's the problem with him. Now, I can promise you this. If the Mets sign him, we will all figure out how to pronounce his last name. We'll all put it together. Colome? Colum? I think it's Colum, actually. I think it's Danny Colum. It's spelled C-O-U-L-O-M-B-E. So I'm pretty sure it's Danny Colum. Danny Colum, I would absolutely sign on a short-term deal. I mean, with that injury history. But I think you have to go in there realizing, all right, the track record tells you he's just never healthy. So you kind of have to know that going in with Danny Colum. But again, this team is so desperate for left-handed bullpen help that signing a guy, even on a deal like that, is probably worth it. So Danny Colum is another guy to keep an eye on. Now, I'm going to give you a righty, but this righty is very good at getting left-hand hitters out. And he's a local guy, another Yankee reject, if you will. And that's Tommy Kahnle. Tommy Kahnle had a very good season last year when he pitches. That's the ultimate key with him. Can he get out there and pitch? But because of the changeup that Kahnle threw, and the joke last year was that's all he threw. I mean, basically all he threw was changeup. He is effective against left-handers. The other Yankee is Clay Holmes. So I'm debating if I put Clay Holmes on my top-level list next to Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, and Jeff Hoffman. I think I have a bias, we all do, to how many blown saves Clay Holmes had last year with the New York Yankees and the fact that he lost his closer's job. But the reason why I am going to put him on the top tier, why I would say he's one of those relievers I described earlier in the podcast where that's a lockdown guy next to Edwin Diaz. I have a lot of confidence in him. Is because Clay Holmes has been, since 2021, really since the Yankees acquired him, one of the most consistent relievers in all of baseball. And he wouldn't have to come here and close. He wouldn't have that pressure of getting those last three outs in the ninth inning. And you saw when the Yankees moved him to another role, the eighth inning, the seventh inning, as more of a setup guy, more of a situational guy, he benefited. He's got that incredibly hard sinker where he gets a lot of ground balls. I think he'd be a good signing. And I would actually put Clay Holmes towards the top of that list when it comes to relievers I feel really good about. Another Yankee is Tim Hill. Tim Hill was great. But I think Tim Hill fits that kind of grouping of relievers where I have no problem signing him. I just don't expect a lot from him. I'm not buying that what we saw Tim Hill do in the postseason is something that's going to continue. Andrew Chafin is another left-hander. It feels like we talk about Andrew Chafin every single year. Every year, we're breaking down the Mets' pursuit of him, which leads me to believe he does not want to pitch here. That Andrew Chafin just never wants to come to New York. And maybe that's why we're always rumored with him, but it absolutely never happens. Another guy is Jake Junis. Junis was with the Reds and the Brewers last year. He was a starting pitcher back in the day with Kansas City and with San Francisco, but now he is a converted reliever and has been relatively solid over the last 2 years. He hasn't done it for a full year. Like even last year, he only made 24 appearances, made a handful of starts. So he was still used as a starting pitcher. But obviously my interest in Junis would be you're simply a reliever. That's it. Aroldis Chapman. I would not touch Aroldis Chapman with a 10-foot pole. While Aroldis Chapman can still get major league hitters out, while Aroldis Chapman still throws, you know, 103 miles an hour, and if you look at his overall numbers last year, it was very typical of Chapman. He has his good moments. He has his bad moments. He strikes everybody out. He walks a lot of guys. He would drive us nuts. When you come into a game, especially with a three-batter minimum, so you don't have time or you're forced to have too much time to watch a guy walk three guys in a row, bro, that's tough to watch. So I don't know, man. Maybe it's the bias of the way we beat him with the Pirates last year. Maybe it's the bias of watching him in New York all those years. I don't want any interest in Chapman. And also, Chapman is showing you he just wants to close. He has 335 career saves. I think his priority is closing more than coming into games and, you know, being a top reliever. So my interest in Aroldis Chapman is very low. Ryan Yarbrough, one of those guys, throw it against the wall, why not? Jonathan Loaisiga, kind of the same thing. He just had such a difficult time staying healthy. Jesse Chavez, no. No, Jesse Chavez stinks unless he's with the Atlanta Braves. That's what I've learned about him. Yimi Garcia would be a solid addition. Wouldn't hate that. Lucas Sims, not really. Now we're kind of in that throwing crap against the wall area. Hunter Strickland, once a Met, always a Met. You guys remember Hunter Strickland as a Met? It was very brief and forgettable. And then you got Joe Ross. So those are, for the most part, Scott Alexander, too. Don't want to forget him. Left-handed reliever. That, for the most part, is what we're looking at when it comes to free agency. My dream would be Tanner Scott. But my tier level in terms of the lockdown guy that would be great to add, and then once you add that guy, you can kind of throw pelts against the wall when it comes to building a bullpen, would be Tanner Scott, would be Kirby Yates, would be Jeff Hoffman, would be Clay Holmes, and would be AJ Minter. I think those are the relievers that kind of fit my top tier. I think they're all relatively going to be expensive, but I think all of them, to varying degrees, have proven themselves and can be really good back-end relievers along with Edwin Diaz. I probably have a little bit of a bias towards the lefty, like a Minter and Scott, because the Mets have been so devoid of lefties. And then I think after that, you know, you're looking at one or two guys that come relatively cheap that you hope you hit on. Because again, you're going into next year with, in my opinion, probably four relievers that you know are going to be there. Edwin's the lock. Garrett and Nunez are likely, but not guarantees. And I think Budo is likely to be in the bullpen. And here's why. So we did a podcast. You can go back and listen to it on the starting pitchers. And now we're doing one on the relievers. I think Jose Budo's role is going to be determined by what they add. Now, we'll get to the trade market as well, because there are relieving trade market options. There are starting pitching options for the trade market. But I think it's almost easier to add starting pitching. I really do. And because of that, I think that Budo is easier to just throw into the bullpen and hope he learns from some of the issues he had last year. But overall, he pitched well and hope he continues to develop as a bullpen arm. I know there is a fear of Seth Lugo. There is a major Seth Lugo fear around Jose Budo. What I would say to reassure everybody is that Jose Budo is a long ways away from free agency. He is in the Mets' control for a while. 2025 may be very different than 2027 and 2026 and 2028. At some point, Jose Budo should be allowed to be in this rotation and show he can be a starting pitcher. But that doesn't have to be this season. So while I get the fear, I totally get it, I do want him to get that opportunity, just may not be right now. Pete Hoffman can't cough on you today, but he has supplied his pitching tiers and his wish list. He's got two guys in his top tier. Now, those two guys are also in my top tier, so we agree, but he only goes two guys. He goes Tanner Scott, which I think is obvious. I think based on left-handedness, based on his success, he's the top guy in free agency. I think he's the top reliever in free agency. The second guy is Jeff Hoffman. Quote, selfishly, for a Mets jersey with my name on the back, maybe this will help make my youngest a Mets fan. Fair enough. I respect that. I respect that. It's like when there's been a Roberts on the Mets, and there's been a few Roberts on the Mets. It's kind of cool. Tier two, AJ Minter, Carlos Estevez, Jacob Junis. I'm with you about Minter. Estevez and Junis, I would not have on tier two. Tier three, these are the pitchers that can pitch in New York. So basically, they're Mets and Yankees. Clay Holmes, Ryan Stanek, Phil Maton, Jonathan Loaisiga, Tim Hill, Brooks Raley, David Robertson, Aroldis Chapman, and Tommy Kahnle. So he mentions our free agents. In terms of our free agents and which ones I would want back, I think Maton, Stanek, and Raley all fit in that tier of once I get a top-end guy, sure, they're in the mix. They're a part of that group of, you know, if I can get them on a one-year deal, why not? Stanek pitched well in the postseason. Maton was really good in the regular season until it felt like he ran out of gas. And Raley's always been good. It's just about health. That's really what it's about. Tier four, Guys that I think can bounce back from a down year, he's got Caleb Ferguson, Jose Leclerc, and Scott Barlow. Old year by year reliables. Kenley Jansen, Craig Kimbrell, Blake Treinen, Drew Smyly, and Andrew Kittredge. I wouldn't touch Craig Kimbrell. Did we not watch what happened to Craig Kimbrell this past year? I mean, he's basically demoted. He's done. Nothing to do with him. Jansen, I'd want if he's willing to not close. Blake Treinen, I think you have too low. I think I would put Treinen a lot higher, closer to tier one. And Andrew Kittredge, kind of the same thing, if he can stay healthy. Tier six, I don't know why, but I want him. Scott Alexander. You want him because he's a lefty, and we're desperate for lefties. And then tier seven, let the pitching lab fix them. Amir Garrett, Giovanni Gallegos. So there's the Hoffman tiers on relievers. So give me one on the top-ish tier, and then give me two on the lower end. I got him on a one-year deal, proven major league reliever, but there are questions about tier. If you do that, so you add three relievers, that goes along with Diaz 4, Garrett and Nunez 5 and 6, Jose Budo 7, and now you're cooking, and now you have yourself a bullpen. And it's funny to think about last year. So last year, the New York Mets bullpen was very, at the end of the season, very mediocre when it came to stats. Now, if you look at the overall numbers of how the Mets bullpen did, it was very middle of the pack. They didn't really have great years from anybody, if you think about it. I mean, Edwin Diaz was up and down to where he lost his closer's role, and then eventually he comes back. They added guys at the trade deadline because they were so desperate. And by the way, here are the numbers. The Mets were 17th. In Major League Baseball, in bullpen ERA. So very much middle of the pack, lower kind of part of it with a 4.03 ERA. 4.03. And it's funny, when you look at the top end bullpens, you're going to notice something about the top six teams. Cleveland, number one, playoff team. Brewers, number two, playoff team. Braves, number three, playoff team, rather brief, but playoff team. Dodgers, number four, world champion. Tigers, number five, playoff team. Yankees, number six, playoff team. The Mets were sort of an outlier in that they made the playoffs with a very mediocre bullpen ERA. The only playoff team, actually, there were two playoff teams that had worse ERAs out of the bullpen than the New York Mets. The Orioles at 4.22 and the Royals at 4.13. The Mets were at 4.03. So overall, it was a very mediocre year from the Mets bullpen, but it was also a very up and down year from the Mets bullpen because there were times in which this was their biggest issue. How many games did they blow because their bullpen struggled? But overall, they didn't have anybody. And we went through this during, I think it was the award show. They didn't have a lot of guys pitch a lot. They really didn't. Like Jose Budo threw as a starter, so his 74 innings are kind of not accurate to bullpenness. The guy who threw the most innings was Reed Garrett at 57, who made 53 appearances. They only had one reliever make more than 55 appearances, and that was Adam Ottavino, who we didn't even mention on this pod because nobody wants him back. So it's interesting that the Mets had an average year out of their bullpen, and yet individually, when you look at what they got, they didn't really get any consistency. It was a very up-and-down year out of their bullpen, which is a good thing because it means there's a lot to grow. And there's a way where this bullpen can become a lot better than it was in a year like 2024, where they did make the playoffs and win 89 games. Any other bullpen arms you want? Who do you prefer? Who do you look at and say, we need to add him? You can email us to ricob@gmail.com. We will go deeper with bullpen arms and starters when we put together our trade podcast. That's coming up real soon, where we come up with trade ideas on targets for bullpen and starting pitchers. Before that, we will do a deep dive on position players. That's coming up real soon, coming up this weekend, actually, where we'll do a deep dive on position players. We'll also give you a bonus, Rico, with an email, Rico. So any questions, comments, thoughts on the offseason, Mets in general, Met history, email us to ricob@gmail.com, and we will do a mailbag Rico coming up this week. So a lot of Ricos as we continue to march through this offseason and get closer and closer to Juan Soto making his decision. Because truthfully, that's going to start the offseason. Until then, it's rumors, it's conjecture, it's minor stuff like Jose Siri. Soto will clearly start this offseason. Thank you very much for downloading. Of course, download your Rico Bronias wherever you get your podcasts. rate, review. We definitely appreciate it. And again, Pete Hoffman would like to apologize for the crazy sounds that he made during the awards edition of Rico Bronya. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.